Welcome to another episode of Backlash Podcast on the eve of the Southern, not necessarily the eve, a couple eves we have to go yet before the Southern Wisconsin opener for Muskies. Actually, it's for all game fish in Wisconsin, but Muskies it's in the Southern zone. It's one of our favorite weekends, right? We look forward to this one, the Northern Wisconsin opener, the Minnesota opener, Canada. I mean, in a month and a half, everybody in the Muskie Range will be happy. We'll all be out there fishing. All will be right with the world. So this week we are going to talk to Captain Eric Leonards with Tactical Angling, and we're going to talk about Southern Wisconsin because it's that time. It's been 2 years since we've talked to him, and we literally almost talked to him 2 years to the day, and we're going to break it down for you, kind of what to expect on the water for this weekend. And so if you're getting out, hopefully you'll be able to take a little something from this and apply it to your angling this weekend, and we hope that everybody gets a great start to their muskie season. Brad, I don't know that I'm actually going to get out for this muskie opener, and that's okay, because I do actually think I will probably get out in the south at some point before the northern season opens, and that is a rarity for me. I do not do that very often.
Well, you're a busy man, Jeff, so I can kind of relate. Yeah, you know, it's one of them things where I've actually had the invite a few times, too, to come to the Southern Wisconsin opener, and I have yet to do it. So it's a tough time of the year when you're a bait manufacturer, as you know, selling bait. So I'll get through some of that, and then I am going to finally head south. I was going to earlier, and we got flooded out down south, so I still have not tapped it at a muskie, but it'll happen here shortly.
Yeah, that's great. I'm looking forward to that. Make sure you tell your little buddy that he has to catch a fish on a certain bait, Brad. You know what bait I'm talking about, well, right?
I'm pretty sure he has, if I'm not mistaken.
Are you sure?
I think so. I know the very first time he put the bait in the water just to kind of look at it again.
Yep.
He had a fish literally the very first time he set it in the water, like 10 feet from the boat, and the fish came and swiped at it, so... I'm pretty sure he's caught on it, but I can't tell you for sure, like a 99%.
The last time I had spoken to him or text with him, I don't speak to too many people, but the last time I had text with him, he told me that at most everything was hanging shallow, and he didn't have the shallow version of it, and so therefore he wasn't using it much yet. And so he's like, I anticipate this changing real soon. So make sure when you get down there, that's priority. We have to get that. And if I don't care if he catches it first or you catch it first, I just need somebody to catch on it, because it's something that, you know, we've been teasing about this for a while. Some people may have a better idea about what's going on here, but we'll let the cat out of the bag here shortly. I need to get some of the production baits in my hand and get them out fishing to guys. And now that muskie season is, you know, approaching, we can get those out to people and get them fishing them. So it's nothing. I mean, I don't want to say this is groundbreaking, right, Brad? But it's definitely something that people have wanted for about 20 years, from what I understand.
Yeah, for sure. I think that it fills a gap that is probably well needed.
Yeah. And so we will let you know that it will be exclusive to me and the manufacturer, and we'll get, don't worry, we'll be doing details here, you know, as soon as I feel like it's ready to go full on. Cat out of the bag. Watch our social media for teasers here in the next coming weeks, as soon as people start getting them chewed on. And it'll be a fun new toy to play around with this season, that's for sure.
So is there a few people with them in their hands yet, Jeff, or is it just Chase and I?
No, it is just Chase and you and me. Those are the only ones that have them. But other people should be getting them, I hope, fairly soon. Like, we have We have the ability to make production baits now, and I have, I don't know how many of them I told them to make up to start with. It must have been 60, and I got a list of a bunch of different, you know, colors from people. And so I know right now you guys are dealing with white, and so hopefully I'll be able to get you some more colors here too. We'll be able to upgrade your color palette. I'm just not positive how fast that'll come, but I mean, literally, muskie season starts like in 5 days, 3 days from when people hear this. And so I want to be able to get them into people's hands very soon. It's, you know, we'll start teasing it more, and we'll tell you all the details on it very soon. But it's just something that not quite there yet. We're not quite ready to spill all the beans. I need Brad or Chase to catch on it first, and then the cat will be out of the bag.
Well, we're throwing the albino around, but I mean, it's white.
Exactly.
So it works.
Yeah. Well, you gotta, I mean, you gotta make do with, if color's your thing, you get the absence of color, right? Or is black the absence of color? I can't remember which one is what, but anyways, so.
I'm pretty good with Sharpie, so we can make it whatever.
Well, when we got them from the guy that made them, he had them laying on a bag that had a bunch of Sharpie on it, so they already looked like crappie pattern-ish, kind of, because the magic marker wore off on half of them, but it's cool. There's a shallow version of it, and I will tell you it's the best shallow version of this particular bait that you've ever seen, so it'll be awesome. But it'll be fun times. Anyways, Brad, I don't know, what else you got going on? What's going on in the Musky Mayhem Tackle World? Because I really haven't talked to you that much. You went on vacation. I got some pictures, and looks like you had a good vacation. And then, you were radio silent, and I had to text your wife today to find out if you were alive to even do a podcast.
Well, unfortunately, when we take a vacation, we play catch up. And so that's kind of been the gig. We got home late Tuesday night and just went right to work, basically. So that's what happens when you're a tackle manufacturer, I guess. But playing a little catch up, hence the reason you weren't able to get a hold of me as quick as normal. And yeah, that's about it. We're just pumping out some orders. You know, it's that time of the year for a lot of shops with the season just beginning. They are in the need of baits at this point. So it's all good.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's that time of year, Brad. It's not quite blade season yet, but it's getting there. And, you know, if you're looking for baits, you know, make sure you check out muskymayhemtackle.com. Check out teamrhinooutdoors.com. I know the new Savage Burbot tube, that thing has been fairly hot for sales for the last week or so. We have that, so go check that out. And if you pay attention to my Team Rhino Outdoors Musky Fishing podcast, I did one with Herbie, and we're talking about a new topwater option from Livingston Lures called the Big Mac. I actually got a chance to play with that the other day, and that seems like it's going to fill the niche in a few people's tackle boxes. Hopefully we'll have that towards the end of May, early part of June. So if you want, you can go on our website and sign up to get notified when that baby comes in. But I don't know. Oh, Sims. I knew a new shirt from Sims. I know that's not going to excite you, Brad, because you're looking for stuff from AFCO. But if you want some Sims branded gear, we got a little bit of that in. I got a new jacket. And we still do have AFCO hoodies, Brad. And actually, those things have been solid. I still need to reorder a few more. But check out teamrhinooutdoors.com. And Brad, I didn't cover it all. I didn't do the big bladed flashaboo, bucktail, the originators, and all that fun stuff. Why don't you handle that today? I don't want to do everything. I mean, the conversation with Eric, I pretty much handled it all. So here you go. Do a little bit of work.
It's no problem. MuskyMayhemTackle.com. Yeah, you can check us out online like that. And yes, we are the original big bladed flashaboo bait. So pretty much anything kind of blade style, you can check it out at MuskyMayhemTackle.com.
And that'll be it. Let's dial up our conversation we had with Eric. Hopefully Eric can, you know, key you in to get you started a little bit on, you know, what he's been seeing on the water. He's been doing some multi-species fishing, so I hope you be a little more successful if you're out chasing muskies this weekend. So I'm going to go dial up that conversation right now. All right, our guest this week is Captain Eric Lennertz with Tactical Angling. Eric, thank you very much for taking time out of your schedule. I know that it's very busy with the Southern Wisconsin opener coming right up. And then, I mean, you're still out there guiding every day. You did a double today. So I appreciate you, you know, coming on today and talking a little bit about what to expect for the Southern Wisconsin opener.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm happy to do it. You know, it's been a weird year. I mean, we had some really warm temperatures in March, you know, kind of spurred some really weed growth and kind of got things going. And then, you know, everybody was thinking, okay, we're rolling right into early summer, you know, and obviously we had that April snowstorm, and it's been so inconsistent, you know. And I mean, I think, like I always say, you know, being out every day this time of year, you get a really good idea of what's going on, you know, and it's been an interesting year. Lots of ups and downs. You know, some of the areas that historically I've seen really good weed growth have been, you know, kind of somewhat bare this year. You know, I think a lot of it is kind of sunlight focused. Some of the bays that are getting a lot of light have good weed growth, but there's areas that I haven't fished a ton in the past where I have found really good weeds. So, You know, I think the name of the game is warm water. What I've noticed a lot lately that's been kind of interesting is we've had a lot of bigger wind days where it's blown 15 to 20 mile an hour. And what that does is, you know, it's really concentrated. It's concentrated some of our warmer water in areas that you maybe wouldn't normally find warmer water. And then another thing it's done in some of my backwater areas that I really like to fish in the spring, it's pushed the warm water out of there. So in areas that I've done really well in the past, early on in the spring, water's crystal clear, there's minimal weed growth, and, you know, and it's colder. So it's been an interesting year. I mean, I've spent a lot of time on the bow with the bajillos on scanning, you know, and keeping your trolling motor on a higher speed and paying attention to what's going on that way.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned the big wind. That is what I was going to talk about a little bit was big wind, because it's been windy. I mean, it feels like every single day.
It's like every day.
Even this morning, you know, I walked out to the shop and it was mostly calm, but it didn't take long and it was blowing again. And over the weekend it was blowing, and it's just been, you know, major wind after major wind. You know, let's talk about that for a second. How do you even combat that? Like, what's your best approach for boat control?
I struggle a little bit when we've got panfish trips, and I actually know this is a musky show, but you know, it can be a little challenging in the wind. Boat control is not really an issue. I mean, I spend a lot of time at the console with, you know, with my iPilot controller in my hand, and I just, you know, if it's an area that I know we've got a lot of good weeds, I just slow down, you know, and I guess what we like to do is if we're fishing good weeds for bass or panfish, I spot lock into the wind and we'll cast at the structure, whatever it is, whether it's rock, wood, or weeds. And that seems to work really well. I've noticed people struggle a little bit in heavy winds, you know, with braided line, you know, it can always be a concern, you know, with the wind knots and stuff like that. You know, and one thing that's kind of been helpful to me is I've been using that Finn's Wind Tamer line. It's a little more rigid, and that's been good for dealing with some of those heavy wind days. But another thing we've done is, if, you know, like Saturday, it blew 22 miles an hour. I started earlier in the day than I normally wouldn't. And usually I like to start a little bit later in April, just because once the water warms up, those fish get a little more active. Stuff starts moving around, panfish move around, and, you know, the bass follow them. And I started a little earlier in the day, and it was too windy to do anything other than just hide out, you know, so we had to find somewhat shoreline, protected shoreline areas where we could just tuck away. And I fished a lake that's got a lot of them. So, you know, it worked out. We caught a pretty good number of fish. I was actually kind of surprised because it had been a little slower that week. But I think if you don't use your electronics and your spot lock, you just got to hide out.
Well, I think moving into the weekend, I don't know if you've looked ahead to that, but that looks like potential for more of the same on Saturday. I saw, you know, gust to 40 miles an hour. You know, granted, it's Monday night, so we still got plenty of time, but it looks like you might have a little bit to deal with there for people that are heading out for the opener.
Yeah. So I've seen what we've got here is I've seen a predicted southeast at like 10 to 15. But I take everything that I see in the forecast this time of year with a complete grain of salt. I mean, it changes, I would say, every couple hours, it seems like. You know, there was days, I mean, I guided last Friday and it was supposed to be a soaker, and it did blow. But I mean, I was looking at canceling the trip because I figured, you know, nobody wants to fish in pouring rain and wind. So I figured, you know, if we can get rid of the rain, we'll still run it. And the rain ended up holding off. But the forecast is so inconsistent in the spring that I really don't pay a ton of attention to it. They have been very spot on with the wind. But, you know, anytime you're fishing a body of water, especially a larger body of water, you know, you never know what it's going to do with the rain. It might push that front, you know, a different direction or whatever. But, you know, I don't know what to make of it really, as far as, you know, it's been inconsistent, but I think the best thing is just keep checking it as the week progresses.
Yeah. And, you know, the one kind of unfortunate thing about the Southern opener is it's, you know, a lot of the lakes there are kind of big and open, I think, for the most part. Obviously there's places you can hide, but
yeah,
you know, like when you go up to Northern Wisconsin, there's umpteen million amount of lakes you can, you know, you just choose one that's a lot smaller or wind protected or, you know, whatever. So there's a lot more options for you when you run into these conditions in the northern opener versus the south. In the south, you're fairly limited on the amount of lakes you can fish.
I agree. And I mean, you know, it's a little different. I mean, when I'm fishing with somebody that's incredibly inexperienced and we're throwing, you know, light tungsten ice jigs and stuff like that, I mean, wind really, really plays a factor. I mean, if you're throwing bigger musky baits, I don't think you need to worry about it quite as much. I mean, I wouldn't pound baits into the wind. I would try to find weeds or find a protected bay and set yourself up to make a drift. You know, that would be my recommendation.
Yep. And so we can't talk early season muskies without talking about spawning fish. What do you think what's the prediction there? Are these muskies done? I'm assuming they don't all do it at one time. So even if you think some are done, there's probably some that still haven't. What are we looking like on that front?
You know, I haven't seen any fish paired up when I've been out fishing. I did stop by, you know, there's that Oconomowoc Bridge. You can always see the fish in the refuge there paired up if they're spawning. And I saw two paired up there on Saturday afternoon, but I just stopped to look at it while I was on my way home. But I've seen some big fish, you know, kind of just solo fish, you know, what seemed like really big kind of dormant females, you know, just kind of laying on the sand and laying on the bottom. I haven't seen a ton with a lot of spotting marks on them. You know, a lot of times you can kind of tell they're a little beat up, and I haven't noticed that this year. And other than that, I haven't really seen a whole lot of fish paired up. As far as water temperatures go, main lake stuff is in the low to mid 50s. We really had a spike after Saturday's, you know, 77 degree day or whatever it was. But a lot of these back bays are I've seen water as high as today. I had 61.9 was the highest I saw in some of the back bays that are protected. But most of the lake is in that 57 to 60 degree range. So, you know, I don't really know if they're done or not. Like you said, you know, many of these fish spawn in waves, but you know, that's kind of where we're at temperature wise. So, you know, I wish I had more info on that, but that's what I've noticed.
Well, like you were talking about, you know, kind of the up and down weather that we've experienced throughout the course of the spring, you know, like even the last show that we did in Wausau, I had a few people asking, you know, like, well, how early is everything going to take place? And, you know, how early is all this going to, you know, factor in or whatever? And I'm like, well, I'm not going to get too caught up in it until I see what happens in April, because I've seen it before where like April is literally like 38 degrees every single day and it's mostly overcast. Oh, yeah. Well, that doesn't do anything, you know, for water temperature. So I'm like, we need to take a look and see what happens in April. And obviously you saw it. I mean, we didn't see 38, but we saw, you know, 30 to 70 to 30 to 70. I mean, it's been a pretty tough spring on the water so far as you know that's concerned. It'll be interesting to see how things start out. I certainly don't think we're going to be nearly as far ahead as what people anticipated when ice started coming out in early March.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, last Wednesday night got down to 28 degrees here in Oconomowoc area where I'm from. So, and I noticed, I mean, you know, as far as I can't say exactly what it's doing to the muskies, I'm seeing it with the bass. You know, they're pushing into the shallow bays and the panfish are pushing in and cruising around, and then we get a cold front like that and it totally derails it. I mean, if I had to pick one thing that I just thought completely ruined spring fishing, whether it's panfish or muskies, it doesn't seem to matter, it's just a severe cold front in the spring. It's just awful. But we've got consistent temps the whole week, it looks like. I mean, I think it's supposed to be like high 60s or 70 on Saturday. And then we've got a couple warm days with sunshine predicted this week. And I think if we actually have those warm, sunny days, that's going to accelerate things quite a bit.
Yeah, I agree. You know, something to note, though, like, you know, as far as like time frame for spawning fish, I had a customer email me yesterday, I believe, and the DNR is up in Green Bay tomorrow, pulling fish from the nets. And so if I remember right, compared to last year and in quite a few years, they were pulling nets like the week before the northern opener. So I'm thinking that, you know, those fish up in Green Bay are definitely going to be in there earlier. Maybe they're not spawning, but I'm assuming if they're taking, you know, if they're taking, you know, eggs from the fish, they're ready to start dropping eggs there. So everything's got to be a slightly ahead of, as far as the Green Bay fish are concerned, which, you know, for people that follow that, and I know you probably jump up there a little bit, it's likely not going to be I'm thinking the Fox River is likely not going to be super hot this year. I'm just guessing.
Well, I have a buddy that kind of, you know, checks that area out on a regular, and I guess he did see some fish paired up that way. So, you know, I mean, it's one of those things where, you know, it's hard to say. It just depends what our weather does here. But, you know, it's just another thing with that Fox River is just it just gets so much pressure, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's you know, pressure is at an all-time high. You know, the other tributaries are always worth checking out as well. You know, everybody seems to pile on top of one another in the Fox, but you can spread out, you know, a little bit and, you know, have success doing that as well.
Sure. Well, let's talk a little bit about, you know, let's talk about new baits out of the box this year. Is there anything that you saw? Because I know you made it to a few shows. I saw you in Milwaukee. I saw you in Wausau briefly. You know, is there anything that you saw at these shows that make you think, I need to have that this year?
Well, I'm kind of a sucker for a glide bait. There's so many different variations and there's so much stuff that's just, you know, really, really unique. And, you know, I'm kind of also a guy where if I see something that's, you know, handcrafted, that's more small, you know, not big box style production line, I tend to jump on some of that stuff. But, you know, I saw a lot of cool stuff at Wausau. I mean, it was an awesome show. A lot of cool custom colors and stuff like that. It was actually my first time at the Wausau show. I usually just work Milwaukee and been there and never ventured up that way. But there's a lot of stuff that's cool. I mean, Bill's, I like the Drop Belly Slammer is a really cool glide bait that's not a whole lot of money. People kind of tend to, you know, I don't know if they just forgot about it or what, but it's been around for a while. But that's kind of a favorite of mine early on in the season. You know, some of the chaos stuff, some of the smaller chaos stuff I like. The Conklin baits I thought were really cool. I don't know if you know Mike Conklin, but he's got some really unique, you know, just I like cool paint jobs and stuff like that, you know, and some of those were really neat. But other than that, I mean, you know, I like some of the basic stuff, Mantas, Phantoms, you know, some of the smaller twitch baits and stuff like the 5-inch slammer, fatty minnow, and then the regular 5-inch slammers is a favorite of mine in the spring. We had kind of a grinder day. I think it was three openers ago, and I had some customers come up from Chicago area, and we had like 40 mile an hour gusts. I mean, it was just really another big wind day that was tough to fish. And we put bills, we trolled the slammer minnow baits, the five inch and 7-inch minnow baits. And we ended up putting a 42 in the boat, and we got another smaller one we never bumped. And, but it was cool. It was the first muskie for the guy. So he was fired up. But, you know, it was one of those super windy days where it's just, there was nothing you could do, you know, other than, I mean, if you had inexperienced people, they were not able to cast in it, you know. But other than that, nothing real in particular. I mean, I'm, you know, David and Goliath got some cool stuff out. He's got a new sharpshooter out that's kind of neat. I haven't had time to do it yet, but I've got a couple on order. So they've been hard to get, but it's basically supposed to be, you know, kind of a different take on a bucktail. I don't know if you've seen those, but they're cool. I can't think of anything else. I mean, I don't know. I'm kind of one of those guys where if I see it, put it to work and try it. And if I have success with it, you know, then I like to promote it. But I've got a lot of new oddball stuff that I've just got to kind of put through the paces and see where we end up.
So you're like a typical musky guy. You know, you buy a couple things, you poke around a little bit. If you like it, then you need to buy like 12 of them, right? Is that how that works?
Dude, it's out of control. That's why we keep guys like you in business, man.
Well, I do appreciate it. You know, it's very kind of you all.
No, man, it's, you know how musky guys are. I mean, or musky gals. I don't want to be one-sided here, but you know, it's like if something works, I mean, I don't know. I probably have 150 of Bill Schwartz's slammer baits. I mean, I've got tons of different glide baits, you know, I mean, just all kinds of stuff. I mean, I grew up running Bagleys in the summer on Pewaukee Lake. They were, you know, a popular bait back then. And I probably have one of the best Bagley collections here in the Midwest now, you know, and a lot of them don't even get run. It's just like anything else, you know, you have success with something, you buy a bunch of it.
The weird thing about it is like sometimes how cyclical things are down there. You know, like for a while you talked about Bagleys, and I think those, I from what I understand, they just became hard to get, right? Is that kind of the deal with those?
So, well, they're balsa, you know, and guys, yep. guys quote them and stuff, but I mean, they're balsa that are super chewed up that tend to always continue to run, but, and then they changed the process on the way they built them. So some of the later models, they, you know, it was like half of them were built on a Friday, you know, the lips were glued and crooked and they never ramp right. You couldn't tune them. And, you know, those baits just, you know, never really got run. And you know, but those originals that are just, yeah, you couldn't get them anymore. And I mean, they're hand painted, you know, balsa baits, you know, they were just basically, there was just limited of available and they just became more and more limited. And I basically scoured eBay and, you know, anytime I'd see one, I had all kinds of alerts popped up. Anytime I saw one, I felt the need to buy it. But, you know, a lot of those are just collector's items at this point. Yeah. I do run a lot of them, but I mean, I probably have 150 of them, you know, and I've got some I run and some I don't. But there's just like anything else. There's just a ton of different stuff out there. You know, I mean, as far as opening day baits, I mean, I kind of have an idea what I'm going to throw. But I probably will do a lot of switching, I think, on opening day. I mean, you know, I might make a small number of casts or something and just keep switching it up until we figure out what the heck they want to eat.
Is that, well, let's talk about that shift up or switch up. You know, that's one thing I talk about on this podcast all the time is like, how long are you going to give a bait before you just say, yep, that's not the one today? Because it's so difficult in muskies to truly know whether or not you even contacted a fish that day. Did a fish even see my bait? Did I even give it an opportunity? You know, I have one friend of mine, that Kyle, that helps me at the shows. He's a bait switcher. I mean, he'll literally switch baits every 15 minutes. And I kind of laugh because there's no way I would ever do that. And I mean, what's your rule of thumb on that?
You know, if I have a lot of confidence in something and I just feel like the fish aren't super active or we're not in a window or whatever it may be. I mean, I'll keep pounding that bait, but I make slight changes. I mean, something as little as just, for throwing blades, a light blade change, maybe I throw something with a stagger blade or a tattered blade or, you know, or just a slight color shift or something. And the little subtle changes make a big difference. You know, early on in the year, like on opener, I'm going to throw all sorts of stuff. I mean, I probably will make 30 casts with something and change it. And that's basically because I don't have those fish figured out yet. And, you know, I'm going to just keep rotating through stuff, you know, and if it's a window, if we're in some sort of moon window or something, I mean, I'm going to stick with what I think is going to make the most sense. But when it's early on in the year and you don't have the fish patterned, I switch it up a lot. You know, I'm not the guy that spends more of the day digging in his tackle box than fishing, but I do think it's important to switch a lot. And then, you know, again, I've got baits that I have the utmost confidence in. And if I'm dialed on something and they're just not eating it, you know, I'll just say, look, keep throwing it, you know, and the more time that bait's in the water, the better chance you have of connecting with the fish.
I know back in the day when I always made sure that I made it out for the north or for the southern opener, I always used it as like spring training. You know, I hadn't thrown baits in a long time, so I'd just be rifling through everything that I bought that was new over the winter. You know, mm-hmm. I was a massive bait changer. And of course, I very rarely connected with a muskie on you know, the opener. It was more just I was just excited to be out there throwing musky baits again. And I think a lot of anglers are just excited to be out there throwing musky baits again. But I, you know, like I said, it was just spring training for me. I was just firing off all these new baits that I bought because I was probably some of my competitors. I was probably their best customer back in the day. Like, I mean, I would go to every show with more money than I ever told my wife that I went to with it. And
for sure,
it was a massive sickness. In fact, I mean, that's kind of how I ended up turning into a business. But
Yeah,
you know, so now I rarely make it out for the southern opener. I had a few guys text me and they're like, hey, are you gonna make it out? And I'm like, yeah, not really. If I'm going to, it'll be on Tuesday, because, you know, like you said, it's my dad always used to call like a New Year's Eve amateur night at the bars, you know. And that's kind of how the southern opener is. It's you know, kind of amateur night that way, as far as just the amount of people out, you know.
That's why I don't guide it. You know, and I mean, if somebody really wanted to go and make a tradition of it, you know, I'd consider it. But I'm going to fish with Aaron. You know, him and I always have a good time. And we fished last year. I think maybe the year before. The last year I guided it was when we caught those fish with the guys from Chicago. But I like to jump into opener and experiment and come up with a plan. And, you know, I mean, I've always been transparent with customers. If we do guide opener, it's like, hey, I haven't fished for these things, so I don't know. You know, everything is an educated guess at this point. So, which, you know, a lot of times we've been successful doing that. But again, it's a matter of, I like to have the fish a little more patterned when I jump into it. And, you know, and at least if you can spend a day or two or the weekend on the water trying to pattern them, you got a lot more to work with when you got customers in the boat.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there's no doubt about that. It's, you know, and every year is a new challenge. What, you know, we haven't obviously had a lot of precipitate. I mean, we've been starting to get some rain, but like overall throughout the course of, you know, winter, we haven't had a lot of runoff. Are you seeing lake levels down quite a bit in your area, or how are we sitting there?
I actually noticed today the lake I was fishing was up a tiny bit, you know, but we've had a lot of rain the past couple of days, and there's an inlet and outlet on the lake. So, I mean, maybe it just hasn't all run down, you know, and drained out yet. But, you know, I think levels are kind of about where they normally are. I mean, you know, like you said, it hasn't been a year. Normally you get the stuff up north where you've got quite a bit of snow on the ground, and, you know, that all melts off in the spring and you get a ton of runoff and higher water levels. And it's a year where we had, I mean, if you were a snowmobiler, you were super frustrated because we just didn't have a whole lot of snow, you know. So, and that holds true. I mean, we had one significant snowstorm here, but that holds true here. So I think water levels are kind of about where they normally are. And I mean, there's rain kind of predicted all week, but who knows if we'll get it or not. And, you know, I don't know how big of a role that's going to play as far as, you know, the water levels go.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that. It's definitely not something that I base any of my plans on as far as, you know, that goes. As long as I can get the boat in there, I don't worry about that. I mean, the muskies will figure it out, right? They're not concerned about that type of stuff. For us, it's all mind game stuff that we play around with. And like you said, though, for us, we only had a couple of measurable snows. We had one in, it was literally the weekend before the Chicago show. And if we had the Chicago show that weekend, it would have been disastrous. We'd have had nobody at that show. And then I think we had, well, maybe it was like the weekend after the Wasatch show, I think, right around there, or that week of it. We had another, or the week after, maybe it was the week after, or the week after that, I don't remember, but we had a very large snow up here too. So, but since then, it seems like we've been getting enough precipitation, enough rain, so hopefully things will level out, because it's been, in my area, you know, it's been dry for a while. I know, Brad, you was it last year or the year before that you guys were dealing with extreme drought?
3 years ago, three seasons ago, and by the, I don't know, end of July, first couple weeks of August, it was pretty ugly, like getting your boat in the water. That was the biggest factor for us. I would say that, you know, we got a rain about a week ago, and that kind of brought the lakes back up to where they were, say, pre-ice up this last fall. And since then, we've had multiple inches of rain here the last 3-4 days. So I haven't been down to check things out, but I can tell you my pond is back up to a better level. So I do think it'll balance out. You know, that's the one thing with Mother Nature. Everybody kind of panics and they don't relate to a week. Can make a massive difference. I don't care if it's water temps or water level. It just takes one good rain, or it just takes, you know, a couple days of sun, and it balances back out. But us as muskie anglers, we're always concerned about weird stuff, and it usually just balances itself back out.
Yeah, I agree with Brad. I mean, that's one of those things where, you know, you can't really. Now, water level's a minimal thing. I mean, I think, you know, you're going to catch 100% more fish if you get out there and go fishing than you would if you sat on the couch. So just get out there and do it, you know?
Yeah, Brad, you've said that a bazillion times on the podcast. Can't catch them from the couch.
So true.
It sounds like you tend to skew on the small side for the opener. Do you ever experiment with large baits?
I have. You know, I think, sometimes, you know, large bait, it's an easy meal. I don't shy away from it. I mean, you know, between the three of us, I mean, we all know, and a majority of muskie anglers know, that You know, muskie will, if you're throwing a, you know, small jerk bait or, you know, bait that's in the 4 to 6 inch range, I mean, that's an easy meal, you know, for a muskie. I mean, you know, and you know how big of meals they can eat, you know. I mean, I'm catching bass on bigger baits, you know, so it's like they're not, you know, I think going with a larger bait, they'll eat it. I mean, if you get it around a fish that's an opportunistic feeder, that's hungry, that's, you know, the right scenario, I don't see why a big bait wouldn't work. I tend to skew on the smaller side. And one of the reasons I do that is I think I see more fish with the smaller baits, and it just gives me more feedback. You know, the more fish I see, the more of an idea I have of what's going on, what they're responding to, and what I can potentially throw to, you know, get some action. And I feel like with customers, you know, I'm always looking for more bites, because I feel like with musky fishing, I mean, if you work your butt off for 8 hours for one or two bites, you know, the more the merrier with that type of thing, because you want more of the experiences so that they can get better at setting the hook and things like that. So I would say, you know, I tend to err on the side of small baits, but you know, it's a lot of that's personal preference of just what I've historically done well with.
You said that you have been catching bass on larger baits. I don't bass fish hardly ever. I want to, because my 10-year-old son wants to get into it. What's a large, you know, how long is a large bait for bass fishing?
Like 5-inch jerk baits, you know, big jerk baits, you know, and I mean, I try not to throw a ton of big jerk baits and stuff, because I don't want to encounter muskies this time of year. You know, I mean, the season's closed, and, you know, now that we have the ability to catch and release bass fish, you know, it's nice that we can go out there. I mean, I don't keep bass in my boat anyways, and all of our bass are catch and release, you know, to begin with, but it's nice to be able to go out there and throw moving baits, rattle traps, jerk baits, chatter baits, spinner baits, all that moving stuff, because, you know, they'll chase and eat this time of year, which is a fun way to catch them.
Yeah, you know, we've talked about lots of different factors. Like, how's the bass fishing this season been compared to normal? I mean, if we can kind of try to pull it into maybe what we can expect out of the muskie season early on, how's bass fishing been?
We've had kind of a grinder week. Last week was a little tough. You know, I've been walleye fishing the majority of April, and I'm transferring over to bass here, and it has been a little tough. I mean, you know, part of that is, you know, I think I can go out and catch them, but, you know, a lot of times some of the baits that we're throwing, you know, I might get somebody in the boat that's maybe never cast it before, you know? So it's like, you got to keep in mind that depending on, you know, you fish with people of all skill levels. So, you know I can work a jerk bait very well. You know, when I get somebody that's new to fishing in the boat, it might take them an hour to get the hang of it, you know, and I work with them constantly, but I mean, it has been a little tough. I thought Saturday was going to be a tougher day. Saturday, they bit well. I mean, we caught, you know, a handful of them. We had a couple of pike by mistake too, but it has been a little tough. And I attribute a lot of that to the temperature swings and just, you know, a lot of the bays and stuff that have that warmer water, that constant wind has been pushing stuff around, and it's been moving the panfish around, and the bass are moving, and, you know, and they may move in. I mean, you know, we see bass that are funneling into the bays when we get a warm day, and then, you know, they kind of push off if you get one of those nights like we had last week where it was 28 degrees, you know, so it's been really inconsistent.
Do you ever, I know you're always busy guiding, so my guess is no, but do you ever sneak down to like any of the southern areas, Illinois, Tennessee, Ohio, Indiana, to do a little early season muskies, or is that?
You don't. I, you know, it's not that it's not on my list, but usually by the time, I guide up until December in most cases. You know, last year was kind of the same program, you know, and even though we did have a warmer year and I could have guided through December, but, you know, I, by the time winter rolls around, I spend that time off season just revamping things and getting stuff ready. And usually, you know, early on in the spring, March, I'll do some brown trout stuff here in Milwaukee. That can be a lot of fun. And then, you know, just kind of get ready for the season. And I, you know, it's kind of on my list. I've traveled more as I've gotten older. I've been a little more open-minded about doing some of that stuff, but I'd love to make it down to Cave at some point and fish down that way. And I just haven't had the chance.
Yeah. Looking at the results of the PMTT from this past weekend, it didn't seem like it was an overly fantastic bite down there.
No, and it looked tough. It did look like it got better as it went on. And I don't know if maybe that, you know, again, having a warmer day, might have fired those fish up a little bit.
Right. Well, and like, you know, you were talking about how you thought Saturday was going to be a bad day. Like, it just goes to show you, you know, you got to get out there and you just fish them and, you know, have a positive attitude and get out and fish and try to put the plan together every time you're on the water.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I told my customers on Saturday, they're a regular group of father, daughter that come up. And then I said, you know, it might be a tough day, but I said, you're going to catch more fish if you go than if you don't. And they said, well, yeah, we're just all about it. And we had around 20 bass and, you know, they were fired up about it. And it was cool because the guy's daughter outfished them and, you know, and they musky fished with me last year. And we had two or three on, and we only boated one of them our last day that we fished last fall, and he caught it. So I know she was, you know, she's got musky envy a little bit. So it was nice to see her do well, you know, on the bass. It was fun.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, it seems as though, I mean, and I could be way off, you know, early in the podcast, you said something about guys and you corrected yourself and, you know, added the females in there. I'm guilty of that myself because it's just something, you know, like, it's just the way you talk about it, right? But it does seem as though there's more and more females getting into fishing, and that's fantastic to see. I love to see it, you know. I've talked about it many times on the podcast. I have one daughter that's all about fishing, especially muskies. She's chomping to get back chasing them because she was left with a few, you know, much like the client you just were speaking of. She was left with some foul taste in her mouth for some fish that she lost. So she's anxious to get back on the water. And, you know, she's talking to me already about, you know, making sure she catches a muskie this year, because last year she had plenty of opportunities, but it didn't really work out. So it's just really cool to see that, you know, because typically, obviously, you know, if the sport of angling is male dominant, but it doesn't really need to be. From what I understand, I don't have any, you know, I don't guide, so I don't have any like real world experience of my own. But I hear that the female anglers that are with the guides, they tend to listen a lot better.
They listen a lot better, man. I'll tell you what. I mean, you know, being that I fish for all sorts of different fish, you know, I get kids as young as 5, 6 years old in the boat, and the young girls are patient. They listen. You know, they're just, I mean, they really are set up to be better anglers. You know, I mean, if they, you know, problem is with guys is we're impatient at times, and I've learned to be patient because that's part of my business and my job, but. You know, the young girls just, they listen really well. I mean, there's a lot of women in the sport that are really good at it. And I don't think it needs to be entirely male focused. You know, it's cool that, like I said, when I say guys, I mean people in general, just kind of the way I talk. But there's a ton of women that do it. You know, I mean, my fiance, for example, I mean, she loves to fish. She doesn't get to go with me as much as she used to, but, you know, she's caught some great fish over the past, you know, decade or so with me. So it's cool. Yeah, it's really cool. Well, I think getting kids involved earlier too is really important, you know?
I agree. Well, you know, like we were talking about before we started recording, my friend, mutual friend between me and Brad, Bill Beekner, stopped by, and his son was there, and his son, you know, would have him literally, you know, get dropped off. You know, Bill would drop him off in the boat during the summertime, and he would go to work, and he would come back and pick his kid up. And so, you know, he's a 14-year-old kid. He has all the proper stuff he needs to operate the boat, and he's literally out there just fishing away for hours and hours. And, you know, Bill's like, I mean, the amount of experience he's getting by just being on the water it's awesome, you know. And, you know, I kind of look back to, like, Larry Dahlberg talking about last week how he's, like, two days over the weekend or whatever, potential for 8 to 16 hours on a weekend just isn't enough, you know. It's, like, and it's... I mean, it's a crazy thing how addicted and how, you know, driven people can be when it comes to fishing in general. And Bill's son isn't necessarily about muskies. He's about all fish, but
yeah, same.
Yep. But it's awesome.
I grew up that way. I mean, I had I lived on Pewaukee Lake as a young kid, and, you know, I didn't have top of the line equipment or anything, but I mean, I learned very quickly how expensive St. Croix rods were because I broke one of my dad's, and I'll never hear the end of it, you know, but But I mean, yeah, I had all the basics to get out there and get out on the water. And you know, I had a 12-foot boat, and I had to basically carry a ice cream pail around and bail the water out of it as I was fishing. And, you know, it leaked, and I was never able to go further than a couple hundred yards from the dock when I was a young kid. But I got out there and I got fishing, and you learn a lot of valuable lessons on the water. You know, that's why I do what I do for a living, because I'm an advocate for conservation and proper handling and catch and release, and just teaching people a way to do things and creating memories on the water. And I think if you start doing that at an early age, you know, you'll have a much better foundation as you get older, you know, and you can teach other people.
Well, let's go down the conservation side of things. It seems like we want to talk about forward-facing sonar enough. Is that something that you use? And, you know,
yeah.
What's your thoughts on it? You think it's detrimental to fisheries? I'm not trying to put you on the spot.
I'm happy to talk about it, man. I am, you know, it's such a hot topic. And I mean, I'm pretty neutral, you know, on a lot of stuff. I mean, I pretty much just try to fly under the radar and do my thing. But I'll tell you what, I mean, I think I don't go out on the lake to play a video game, but I do like forward-facing sonar. I think it's a valuable tool. It helps me locate fish. And there's times where I really like it. You know, if we're fishing deep water bluegills in the summer and, you know, we're following a school around, and, you know, there's been plenty of times I always work at the council and I watch my electronics and we're using it, and I'll say, well, are you on the bottom, you know, to a customer? And they'll say, yeah. And I'll say, well, open your bail. And I'll watch his bait fall down to the bottom, and then you'll watch the fish swim over and eat it. And people get a kick out of that, and that's a lot of fun. But with that being said, we also don't over harvest bluegills. You know, I mean, I've been voting for 10 fish for quite a while now, because I think, you know, you can combat the forward facing sonar thing with just using proper conservation, proper, you know, keeping the right amount of fish and, you know, selective harvest. I think with the musky thing, it's kind of a hot topic, because, you know, there's people that go out, they stare at the screen, and you know, they find a big fish, you know, hanging in the sand or something, and they cast at it until they fish it off and it eats. And that's something I don't do. I like it because I use it to locate fish. But again, I don't necessarily sit there and stare at it. It's just there's certain times that I like to use it, you know, and then there's other times where I don't. You know, I mean, if I'm out and I'm casting a big giant weed flat for muskies, I'm not staring at the sonar. But it's a tool that I think as a full-time guide, it's important to have. I like to have all of the technology available to me. And if somebody's paying me to go out fishing, I like to be able to show them that there's fish there, and they don't always necessarily cooperate. But it's neat to be able to kind of, you know, show people that what we're looking at or what we're concentrating on. And my thought on forward-facing sonar, you know, with limits and stuff like that, I don't necessarily think it should be banned. That's my personal opinion, but I just think people need to do better at how they use it.
Yeah, we've talked about that numerous times on this podcast about, I mean, Brad, you can go down the road if you want. I mean, it comes with great responsibility, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's the bottom line, right? And I think Eric just said that, you know, the bottom line is if you use it as a tool. With Larry last week, we talked about how it's dumbing down the angler. I mean, there's still a lot to be said about time on the water and how you utilize your time on that water. And staring at a screen is not necessarily the best method at the end of the day. If you want to be a good all-around angler, that's just the bottom line.
Agreed.
There's still a lot to be said about putting a stepladder in your boat, Brad, and watching with your pair of polarized sunglasses what's going on ahead of you, right? I mean, I heard that last week.
Well, there's no doubt about that either. I mean, years ago when we were doing videos, it's kind of funny that Larry brought that up. And I built this stand that was 4 feet high that we had in the boat for my cameraman. And he was pointing out fish when we weren't seeing them, you know. So it can be utilized as another tool as well. There's no question about that. Is it practical to the normal angler? Probably not. But you could go out there and do that and start learning some things. You know, where are these fish going? What are they doing? Why are they there? So, Yeah, Larry brought up a valid point in that.
You know, Eric, one thing you mentioned was you learned at a young age how expensive St. Croix rods are. I know that because I see you at the shows, you work out of the St. Croix booth, so obviously you have an affiliation with them. If you had to pick two musky rods out of the St. Croix lineup, which two are you going to pick?
Well, that's a loaded question, buddy, because I got a whole bunch of them here in my garage. You know, I a favorite of mine. So I like the Blue Ox for handling big baits. I think it's really, really an awesome rod. What I did was I switched over to the Legend Tournament style with the grasp handle. And speaking of controversial subjects, you know, that was another one. People didn't like the grasp handle at first, but I get a lot of people with small hands, and I get a lot of people that, you know, that are kind of new to casting any type of, I've eliminated bait casting reels for many of my guiding other than some of our live bait setups and our musky reels, because I feel like the brakes on, you know, the musky reels allow you to really, really dial them in and work with somebody and teach them how to cast them properly. But that grasp handle, man, has been awesome. And I had one rod, I had a Sling Blade that had that handle, and I ended up, I got rid of all my other musky rods, and I converted everything over to St. Croix Legend Tournament musky rods, because I like the handle so much. And I got a lot of good feedback. You know, if you got somebody that, you know, was newer to it and you got a bite at close to the boat or something, they were able to gain a lot more leverage on that fish. And another thing that's really nice is, you know, I mean, I think we put ourselves through a lot of abuse when we musky fish, and it's like, you know, you're casting for hours and hours on end. And one thing that handle allows me to do is it allows me to keep my wrist straight. So, you know, you don't have your wrist cocked at a weird angle. And I think that helps a lot with people with, you know, wrist pain, elbow pain, stuff like that. Some of that carpal tunnel stuff that you get. That's just my experience from using them. Back to your question, if I were to pick two, I would say the Blue Ox and the Blademaster 2.
Okay, so you picked the two most popular models. I would say, like, those have been the ones that have hardest to keep in stock. And
I love them.
Brad, I
think... And the EVA foam handle's nice, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. Brad, I think you'd probably agree with us that those would probably be... I mean, I'm not special enough to play around with anything new, so you get to play around with some new stuff before it's available. But of the stuff that's available, you would probably land on those two rods as well, wouldn't you, Brad?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's no question about it that those are probably the two most popular at this point. And it gets the job done for all different types of baits. And I think that's probably where you're going with that as well, Eric. And then talking about absolutely. The graph, I mean, you hit it on the head, right? It's funny how many people got in the boat and I don't want to use that. You know, they're like, I'm not going to use it. And you give it to them in 15 minutes, half hour, 10 casts, just depends on the individual. As soon as they're done handling the graph, it's all done. They're going to go buy a rod immediately. And I think, you know, again, we're a bunch of stubborn old musky anglers that choose to think what we want to think. And ultimately, I mean, don't be afraid to try some of this new stuff. It can really, really change your life.
I agree 100%. I mean, I think, you know, as we get older, it's like you got to be open-minded. I tell my customers that all the time. I mean, one of the things I love about fishing is there's not one day I go to the lake and I say to myself, I'm not going to learn anything today. I mean, you learn every day. No matter how much you know, you learn every day.
I can't argue with you one bit. I mean, that's how it is. And you should. I mean, that should be the goal, to learn every day as mm-hmm. well. You know, not yeah. only do you, but that should be the plan, right? Try to learn something new. Yep.
Yep. Absolutely, man.
I mean, I try to poke around at either new spots or new baits or new something every time I'm on the water. I sometimes get stuck into chasing around lakes just to play with different lakes, because I still like to do that. It's still fun to do, but, you know, there's times that I should just stick to, you know, Larry talked about it last week, actually, like, as a newer musky angler, just stick to one lake, learn it seasonally, to the best of your abilities, and you'll come out a better angler, you know, for it. And so it's, you know, like I said, fishing is whatever you make of it, right? I mean, I think that's ultimately what it comes down to. I think a lot of times, you know, people feel like they're in competition with everybody else, whereas you'd enjoy the sport probably more if you just took it for whatever you want it to be, you know?
I agree. I think, you know, we need to do better as anglers. I mean, just be courteous, you know, to other people on the water, give people room. You know, I mean, etiquette goes a long way. I mean, you know, if I see somebody in a kayak or fishing from shore, I try to move out of their way. It's just a little respect, a little courtesy. It really goes a long way.
All right, Eric, we have not played five questions in all of this year, I'm thinking. I can't remember the last time we did it. So I have a list of questions. I'll just pick a few of them here. And let's go with, we got to talk about the moon. Is the moon a big deal or is it not a big deal?
Huge.
All right. Well, then we'll stick with the moon and we'll go full moon or new moon. And which one are you going to choose to fish under?
Is there an all of the above? Honestly, if I had to pick one, I mean, probably full moon.
Okay. Let's go with bulldogs versus medusas. Which one do you prefer?
Medusas.
All right. That's interesting.
I like both. I like both. I'm just, for whatever reason, you made me pick one, so I think I'm going Medusa.
Sure. All right. Then let's go high-speed reels versus low-speed reels. Which one are you going to pick?
High-speed.
All right. And then let's talk a little bit about leaders. You going to go with a fluorocarbon leader or a solid steel leader?
Solid steel in most cases. I use fluoro a little bit, but mainly solid steel or solid strand steel, depending on what we're doing.
Yep. All right, Eric. Well, that's it. Five questions. Easy, done. Let's talk a little bit about your availability for this season. If somebody hears the podcast and they think, man, this Eric guy is really knowledgeable, I need to get in the boat with him. Do you have availability? And if so, how do they get in touch with you?
Yeah, absolutely. You can either contact me direct. I have a website that's tacticalangling.com. Another option is you can give me a phone call at 262-227-3093. Or there's a contact tab on my website and you can reach out directly that way. And, you know, I guess the calendar is kind of starting to fill up. I think last time we spoke, I had gotten engaged. Now I'm getting married in September. So that's taken a little bit off the September calendar. But other than that, I've got some available dates and hoping to have another really good year. And, you know, whether somebody wants to go out for panfish or muskies, I'm happy to talk trips.
All right, Eric. Well, once again, I want to thank you for taking time out during this busy time, especially, like I said, right before the muskie opener. But I know you're on the water all the time anyways. And I hope that you have yourself a tremendous start to the muskie season. But overall, I hope you have a great season. And I hope many of our listeners take advantage of the Southern opener in Wisconsin this weekend. I know everybody is anxiously awaiting the arrival of the Northern opener and the Minnesota opener and the Canada opener. And you know what? They're all going to be here very soon. But until then, I hope everybody gets some time on the water this weekend. And I want to thank you all for listening to our podcast. And we will be back with a new episode again next week, Wednesday. So have a good weekend on the water and good luck fishing.
Thanks, buddy. I appreciate it.